One of the reasons people are depressed is because they don't have a compelling future. They don't see anything for themselves. And I'm like, you are limiting your future because you refuse to believe in yourself, but yet you're giving of yourself to everyone else.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Mino, and today with me, somebody who reached out recently, is starting her journey of healing and helping others. She departed law enforcement after sustaining an injury on duty that resulted in a TBI, which is traumatic brain injury. And I'm thankful that she's taking the time today to come on this podcast and share her story. I appreciate her tremendously. Welcome, Emily Henderson. I got to tell you, I am a big fan of Winchester, Virginia. I could see myself living there.
It's so beautiful. Like,
I know.
We got married probably about like 30 minutes from there and about halfway. Have you ever been to Middleburg?
You know, I've driven through there a couple times, and every time, because I teach over there sometimes, and like right in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Is that right over there?
And well, no, not West Virginia, but it's same.
Well, it's right close to. I was on the way there because I was coming up from the south. I was in Winchester. I'm like, yo, I would live here. And like, I looked at the prices. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate to like much humble brag, I can afford that shit. Yeah. And but for me, if I was gonna move and like leave Jersey, I'm like, it's still too cold. Right? It's beautiful, but it's still too cold. You guys are not far off from us.
Mm-mm.
You're like 10 degrees. And you're like 5 to 10 degrees different than us.
Yeah, I think it was like 20 degrees just the other day. And then now it's 60 degrees outside. So it's like, you can't really keep up. And so it's not very different. Like until you hit North Carolina, after like about an hour on the road into the state, do you actually get warm summers? Like it's, I do not miss working in the snow.
Like for me, if I'm leaving and going somewhere, it's like Caribbean Florida. Like I'm going to Key West because I want to feel like I'm on vacation every day. I'm not going to be waking up. Like even Northern Florida, no good. It's like 30. I've got to go to Orlando next week. It's like 55 degrees there right now. I'm not be for that shit. I want to be on vacation. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yo, Em, what the fuck are we talking about today?
Okay. So basically, almost died in 2020 on duty. And from there, my whole life fell apart and had to completely reinvent who I was. And in that process, I saw the ugliest side of law enforcement. But at the same time, I'm the type of person, like, don't complain to me unless you have ideas. Like, I don't want to hear your negative BS unless you have actual thoughts. And throughout the process, I realized I not only was contending for myself and my future, but as I shared my story tiny bits along the way, a guy would break down in tears, like, I'm depressed and suicidal too. And I'm like, what? And they would be asking me, like, how did you do it? And I'm like, do what? I'm still in the middle of this. And they're like, no, I don't know how to even get, like, I don't know how to get out of bed. And I'm like, oh, here's a tip. But I wasn't realizing that those, what felt like small conversations, was actually something much bigger than me. So through that whole process of I wound up leaving law enforcement. I've only been out of law enforcement barely a year, which felt like a death I'll be totally honest with you. Walking away was, I mourned. I went through every stage of grief. And I used to say I wanted to be the old crusty lady getting the vanilla sheet cake 50 years from now. But I found a way to be equally as effective outside of it. And through recovery, the journey, I find myself sitting here because I keep hearing this phrase. These are conversations that need to be had. And I'm like, but something's got to be done on the other side of this conversation. And I'm sick of it. So that's where just my passion came through. And I reached out to a mentor, kind of like a health coach slash business mentor. And I said, these are my dreams. I have no clue what I'm doing. And he's like, you need to pitch yourself. You need to put yourself out there. You got to, like, nobody knows that you have this passion if you never tell anyone. Nobody knows what you went through until you actually open your mouth. And I was like, oh boy, okay. And so the first person I thought of, you're actually the very first person I pitched myself to. I am. I tried to get your training at my department during light duty in a cast, actively 2 months shy of a plan to kill myself. And nobody knew that. Nobody asked. Nobody even asked if I was okay after I fought for my life. And I thought, what are the voices I need in my head of telling me, get back on the saddle. Don't be a bitch. Like, don't be weak. Go out and fight that fight. Just look at it. Like, what's the goal? Chase it. And so I pitched myself. I was like, I don't know how to do this. And so I just, you know, I just sat down and I typed up the little blurb that I think actually came across Frankie's desk. I'm not sure because I had no idea who was going to get this. And I just was like, here I am. If this sounds like something you want to talk about, it's okay if it's a no. I'm used to the 99 no's. I just need a one yes. And I picked you first just because I heard a lot of your passions, a lot of your, this is not okay, so here's what I'm doing. And I'm like, if anybody in law enforcement I want to talk to, it's Dennis.
Well, it means a lot to me. Thank you very much. And I wrote down something that I admire about you already. It's there are not many people in the world who are willing to take the responsibility when nobody else is willing to do it, because it is a long journey. It's a long fight. A guy asked me this morning about advice. He wants to start a police training company. And I say, he goes, what's the biggest thing that you're going to face? I go, criticism. That's just it. People are just gonna be so critical about the work that you're trying to do, even though it comes from your heart and your soul, and you're trying to make it so much better for everybody. There are going to be people out there that criticize the shit out of you, misinterpret you. There's judgment. And he said, well, how do you deal with that? I go, I don't give a fuck anymore. In the beginning, I was like, I gave a fuck. And I think that my mission is so pure that I really don't care what anybody thinks. And I think, I know the work's very important. So that's a really nice comment. I don't know if first of all, I was unprepared to hear that. So, and I'm one of those people, if you could tell, I don't take real sincere compliments well. Like, I like compliments of like, hey, I think you're hot. I'm like, thanks, I appreciate it. It's good to know at 40 when the 22-year-olds still think I'm just dandy, right? That's cool, right? That's always a good fucking thing for a guy who's 41. Sometimes I get compliments from people, and I get a lot of them because like people appreciate the work that we're doing, but something like that really catches me off guard, and you could see I'm a little awkward with accepting it, but I appreciate it so much. It really means a lot to me. You've made my day, probably made my weekend, and it's just a good reminder of why it's important to, you know, stay the course. And I guess the advice goes back to you the same way. But tell us about you a little bit.
So, and you're welcome for the compliment. A lot of times leaders need leaders, and leaders are also, you have to be a little insane. You watch Shark Tank, and people think that those sharks are assholes. They think that they're jerks. Actually, they are probably the most fearful in the room. They just aren't going to tell you that. They have I don't even have a good enough word in the dictionary to describe, but you almost
they're
have to be a little
battle hardened, by the way. Those guys are battle hardened. Yeah. They're five-star generals on the fucking battlefront of business, which people don't realize. You know, today's laborer who's rewarded is not somebody who goes out and does physical work. It's the emotional work that people put into, the courage that it takes to do something like this when 99% of people run the other direction, the tenacity. So, you know, I come home sometimes and I almost feel guilty. And I'm like, man, I'm exhausted. Like, I am fucking whooped. And I always say this thing of like, who am I to say this? I wasn't in a ditch digging a hole all day and moving that. And I'll be honest with you, M, this shit is harder than that. And it sounds fucked up to say, but there is, it beats the piss out of you. Mm-hmm. And then you're always reminded why it's important. And like, it's just part of the journey. So you're mm-hmm. a very good observation of Shark Tank. I watch that show a lot to learn from them because I know they've got a lot to figure out.
Before my injury, it's so funny. My mother and I would be like, oh, I can't watch that show. I feel bad for the person they don't pick. And then on the other side of my injury, I am not the same human today. Like if Emily today sat down with Emily of April 19th of 2020, that was the day I got injured, we would not know who each other are. We would not like one another. We would not be able to probably have a conversation because who I am now, any cop who hears, I fought for my life, we hear that phrase, you just know. And until you've actually done that, do you have this, oh my God, how are you? It's like, there's a switch. And so now I agree with you. I see them totally different. And I see them as, you have to present yourself in such a way that you have to be nuts to believe that you actually are the single most qualified individual to have the conversation, do the task, do the thing. And you have to legitimately release any fear of failure, any fear of an opinion, because opinions are, you know, I don't care anymore. Because for a long time, I didn't realize that I was in a subconscious state of life. I was just checking boxes. This is what I'm supposed to do. Now it's, if it doesn't fuel me forward, I'm not doing it. If it doesn't serve my individual passions, purpose, and just save lives, you are just in the way. And I never realized how much like, and it can be, it's, we are living in a world that is results driven. Cops are fueled on getting the attaboy, being the one who gets a little pin, a little sparkle. Oh, you're doing the thing. That's not enough. And when I say it felt like a death leaving law enforcement, I don't say that to be dramatic because when I left, I had no clue what was next. No idea. When people ask me, how did you do it? And I do kind of bunny ears because I'm like, I just went with my first inspired thought. I said, I'm not happy. I don't like where I'm at. I have got to use my skills and abilities. So I'm just going to go with the first idea, scared to death. And on through that was struggling with depression, suicidal thoughts, anxiety, severe PTSD, and the ugliest side of law enforcement that I did not know could get that bad. And it devastates me that I have to be the one who has these conversations, but who better than me? Because I passionately believe that the loudest person in the room who has the knowledge, training, and experience to back it up and say, then I've got some plans, actually will make the difference. And you said it best, about 99% of Americans will find a place along their way to greatness that's comfortable and they'll stop. 1% left of those Americans are the ones who become that one percenter, who become the one who actually does what they say they're going to do. And that's kind of me in a nutshell of it took looking death in the eye that night to say, I'm not done. And I'm removing the muzzle. I've never been in a position more now than ever to not worry about, you know, I'm not going to get written up by the chief, get called in and told, you can't say that. Actually, I can say whatever I want to now. And that's powerful. My offender is in prison. I am no longer tied to a department and I'm able to actually say, here's what's up. Other cops need to know that they're not alone, that the things that they're thinking and feeling that they think are weaknesses are actually their greatest skill, their greatest talent. And if somebody doesn't step up and say some of this, we all know the 22 a day for military. Who's talking about the 22 a day with cops? Because it's happening rampantly. And I was almost one of them.
I want to, before we continue on, encourage you to stay the course because it's going to get fucking turbulent. And you're going to question yourself at times of like, fuck, is this worth it? Right. And I don't even question myself anymore. I'm just like, whatever, man. Like, this is the fucking journey I took. And I just, like, you're just not going to beat me up enough for me to fucking walk away. It's just, it's never going to happen. It's just not. And anybody who's trying to run interference in my game can run it as much as they want. But I'm telling you, I'm Rocky in fucking round 14. You are not going to knock me down. There's just too much outlets for me to reach where I need to reach. And, you know, there are times it's very difficult. It is. You've got to get a real strong foundational mindset of where you're going to go to when turbulence fucking hits, because sometimes turbulence lasts a long time. But the good news is, like any plane ride, it doesn't last forever. And then all of a sudden it's smooth sailing again. But don't get too comfortable because it gets turbulent again as well.
Yeah.
So what happened to you?
So,
okay, let's start. Before we do that, let's tell me about how you got into law enforcement, when you got into law enforcement, what you did. You want to blast anybody? Feel free to. Like, yeah, I don't. I mean, I'd like to blast hundreds of people. Yeah.
I got notes. I got notes because I have a TBI. So if people think that I, like, when I'm on a Zoom and you just see me like this, I'm like, I'm listening, but I'm going to forget if you start telling me things. I'm like, no, I used to have perfect memory. I would have been able to recite every word you've said so far prior injury. Photographic memory of books. I got hundreds on all my tests. Like, and people thought a lot of it was like, oh, I was a geek through and through. So I was the kid growing up, straight A's, perfect in school, had no idea what I wanted to be. And if I never told anybody that other than my parents, and my parents were feds and then eventually left a little bit after 9/11, it changed my family's life. And from there, as I was growing, my dad was like, Em, I know you've got big dreams, big goals, but you got to pick something. Like, you can't make money just being a dreamer. You've got to pick something. And so eventually I just picked a college. And I picked a criminology degree because I figured, well, I knew subconsciously I had some skills, but I was like, I don't want to do what mom and dad did, because then everyone will think I did it just for them. And if I don't do it, then they'll think I'm not doing. I was so wrapped in no idea what I wanted to do. Get to college, and I was broke as a joke, and I needed a scholarship. So I became a resident assistant. One night, a female was raped on the dormitory in the dorm building that I was in charge of. I happened to see this guy running away from the building. And because of some of my skills, I knew every human being in a 15-story building, first and last name, favorite colors. If they had told me their phone number, I knew it backwards and forwards. It just my memory. And I saw this guy. And when he saw me, he knew who I was. I didn't know who he was, but I could tell you down to his freckles, the shoes he was wearing, the colors of his socks. And I was like, that's sus that he's running away. It's like 2:00 in the morning. I was coming back from front desk duty as a resident assistant. And lo and behold, the door is cracked. There's a female who's been raped. And I was like, it's that guy. And I had no facts to prove that. It was just a suspicion. So I believe it was campus police who I was speaking to, but it was a female in uniform, and she's a sergeant. She has not only just command, but everybody just her presence of, like, she's the smartest person in this room. And once all investigative portion was finished, she paused with me, and that pause changed my life. And she looks at me and she goes, you, and she kind of, everything I just stated about my skill sets, she was the first human being to intercede in my life and say, have you ever given an idea of actually using everything you're good at? Have you ever thought about being a cop? And I was like, no, I've always thought that those things were weaknesses. And she's like, you should reach out. That was really impressive. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I just kind of like, I didn't think about that, because I was always trying to figure out, well, this person wants me in this cookie cutter, and this person wants me in this cookie cutter. And this was the first time of, no one in my family's ever done this. I don't know any female. She was the first female cop I'd ever seen in my life. And she was in charge, and she's saving lives. And that began the journey. So skip a lot of it. I was told no for so long. I'm telling you, I was told no because I was a girl. I was told no because I had a college degree. I was told no because I wasn't tall enough. I had a deputy chief look me in the eye and say that my what is it called? Sensibilities wouldn't be able to handle it. While his half of his department of detectives were female. And so I remember looking at him and said, you will rue the day you told me no. You will. And fast forward, I eventually hit patrol. I got an award in my first year for helping with an active shooter call. And he was in the room. And I just remember winking at him of like, I told you, because I had a personality. I had just this belief in self that if I can conceive the idea, it's like the Disney, if you can dream it, you can do it. And there was no one, like you said in the beginning, you couldn't talk me out of it. And through just that night in that dorm, that changed my whole life of, no, I actually am good at some things. And this job may actually be the thing that amplifies it. And I think it was 12, 13, 14, 15, 5 years, I fought to become a cop. And there's a lot of heinous, disrespectful shit, and a lot of it sexist along the way. And I just kind of filed it in the back, just filed it away and just kept pushing. And I actually had a guy during one of my tests, he lied to the instructor that I didn't do the sit-ups, because I had already beaten him out of the job at that point. And he was holding my feet for sit-ups, and he lied to the instructor about my sit-up count. And that's how he got the job. And I'm like, just little things like that along the way, somebody else, it might've made him quit. And for me, I was just like, well, I'm going to come back to the next class and do like 500 sit-ups so that there's no way. I just refused to stop. And April 18th, the day before my injury, I was the happiest I'd ever been. I was on patrol, finished academy, finished FTO. And it was the first time I had, like you said, turbulence. There was no turbulence. I have made it to the position in where now I'm just going to learn as much as possible. I'm going to be effective. I'm going to be proactive. I'm going to sign up for all the classes. Very next night, my whole life changed. So that's what got me from college kid who had no idea what they were doing or what they wanted to do. And then one day, one moment changed the whole game for me.
What happened that night?
So I was on night shift. I actually have never been afforded the opportunity to watch any of the footage. I wanted to, I asked. So a lot of this is just based on my memory, but, approximately 1 or 2 in the morning, I had just finished lunch. That's how it always goes. And tones drop for an assault in progress at some piece of shit hotel. And they stated, though, like, get there as fast as you can because there's children involved. And you drop, you go. And upon arrival, so this is at the height of COVID. COVID has only been, like, the world shut down March 2020. It's only been about a month. And we're all still learning. And so it's just me and my sergeant on duty. There's 2 cops covering our town. Now, it is town police. It's small, but crime happens anywhere. And anybody who says that crime doesn't happen in their town, I just want to look at them and be like, you don't deserve this job, because that's so not true. So I arrive on scene. My next memory is my sergeant being like, he's pointing to the top of the parking lot of the hotel. And he's like, go get her under control. And I'm like, I don't even know other than dispatch what's going on. And I see someone who's kind of being erratic, but there's 2 kids, no shoes, no coat, standing in front of a car. And I'm like, I know this family. I know her. She had been a victim in a domestic violence case. So I'm actually calling out to her by name. And I had hugged her in the hospital. This person, I hugged her when she got justice she was stabbed by her husband. So I'm going, I'm like kind of piecing it together. If you know your town, you know your people. I walked up to her and I threw my N95. I can smell alcohol like from her. And I'm going, this is not what I think it is. And she's got car keys in her hand, and she's trying to get into the car to drive away with her two babies standing in front of the car. And so I'm trying to scoop up the kids and move them away from mom. She attacks me out of the blue, like full throttle, like football tackle. A lot of the details I don't remember of the fight, but I do remember we went to the ground. And I put a lot of time and training into ground fighting. And so I was winning. And my sergeant, coming from the other side of the parking lot at this point, as soon as he realized that there was a fight happening, because she and I were in between two cars in the middle of the night. So it was very hard for him to even see. So by the time he got there, we're the gnashing of teeth. And what really, just to this day, I don't know if it's in anyone's reports or not, there was an off-duty cop watching 2 feet from me and never helped. While she was making conscious decision, trying to grab my firearm from me. She was trying to kill me. It was a conscious decision.
Why did he get involved? Why did he not get involved?
That's a fantastic question.
Do you know who it is?
Actually, no, I do not know this individual's name. I want to know why he was in that parking lot. I want to know why to a lot of things, and I have yet to get them. But he never once intervened to assist. My sergeant gets up there. We finally kind of get her standing. And at that point, I had already yelled into the radio, like, she's trying to take my gun from me, get as many units as here as possible. And because the way I position my radio, I put it right by my shoulder in case both hands were in a fight. So you can literally hear me screaming at her and my sergeant and this joker who's doing nothing. Fought her all the way into the damn car. The next memory I have is there were two sheriff's deputies standing to the left side of my vehicle who didn't assist me and my sergeant either. They were all, in my personal opinion, they were afraid. Because they'd heard over the radio saying, this person is trying to kill me. We get to the jail. The offender bites one of the jail officers and rips out a chunk of his wrist. We get her into the jail, and her hands were cuffed to the bars, like, just because we were trying to get her so she didn't hurt herself. And moving from in front of her to beside of her so that she wouldn't kick me, she swung her whole body around, slams her feet into the bottom of my chin. I fall backwards and slam my head into the concrete jail floor.
Damn.
And I blacked out. I don't remember anything next until I'm in an ambulance, and the memory is like, I'm in an ambulance and I don't know. I get to the hospital, and the only memory I have is one of the guys from our squad who I guess got called in because I got hurt. Don't know why he came in there. And then my next memory is I'm in the car on the way home, and I'm in bed with my dog, my mom, and my fiance at the time, now husband. There's a lot of other things that happened. Yeah, that's how I was injured. I suffered a traumatic brain injury. And what I didn't know in the fight, you can actually see, the only reason I know this is the Commonwealth's attorney told me this. It was my right hand, my dominant hand, because they teach, you know, they teach you drop your weight and then start slamming their hand when they touch a gun. And like, I was so loud that I know that the girl running the shop at the Wawa across the street could hear me. And so I didn't know, but all the metacarpal bones in my wrist had been shattered. And so you see me going like, I couldn't do anything with my hand, but my adrenaline was so high, I couldn't figure out why I couldn't use my hand. And so fast forward during recovery, and I was like, yeah, my hand still hurts to this day. Well, I guess when you go like this with 6 broken bones, you're causing a lot of injury to like your tendons and all the things that make your dominant hand work. So that is what I remember now in going through, actually going to court, getting justice. There was a lot more details that kind of, yeah, I kind of remember that. Like, oh, I didn't know that happened. And resources that were never offered, conversations that were never had, common decency that was never extended. There's a lot. And it was the single most traumatic moment of my entire life.
What did you learn the most out of that incident?
I'd have to say on first blush, if you're not training to ground fight, you need to. The phrase that they teach you in the academy where they say it's not a matter of if, it's when. I don't like that. But at the same time, is not that I had my guard down, but I did know this person by name. And, you know, at the same time, is trying to save her children. A child's literally trying to save her kids. Is at the same time, in reaching down to grab them, it's like there's some instincts there of, if you can smell the alcohol through her, through her mask. So it's beyond all of those things, is ground fighting. And I learned some really negative sides to law enforcement of taking care of your people, because I was not taken care of. And it broke my heart. It also enraged me to a point that I could taste it. It was so bad. Our chaplain didn't even call at all. And my father was the head chaplain. Like there's so many layers. Like nobody called. No one said, hey, you're walking back in on light duty in a cast. Are you sure you really should be on light duty? Like, just so many questions were never asked. And it just showed me part of our system is broken. And I was, you know, that third layer of, I can't believe my life is here. I can't believe that this is happening to me. And I've grown through that phrase, and nothing happens to you. Things happen for you, and how you respond to those things is how you grow. I was not there yet with the injury, but if anybody hears this story, it's, I was able to fight and win. I knew I was going to win. And I worry about the ones who their departments are not sending them to quality defensive tactics training. You are never going to whip out your baton and say, get back. Like, that's just.
Stop plagiarizing me. It's like, they're going to put it on my tombstone.
But literally I say that, I didn't even think about that, but no, like I remember people asking me about the fight of, everybody's looking for this secret sauce of, well, what did you do and how did you fight? I fought to win, and I knew that I would. And I thought to myself, like, why is this even a question? And it's, I went back through everything they taught in defensive tactics, and I'm like, we spent 3 days in the class, spent maybe 4 days one-on-one, and most of it, there was really only one day where it was actually scary. And I'm like, I'm the one who outside of the academy sought additional training. My husband is a Marine, and I actually, this makes people laugh, but I had a moment during defensive tactics where I was like, they're assigning me someone my size. What are the odds of that in real life? When am I actually going to fight a 5 foot, 130 pound female? I'm probably going to fight somebody who's 6'2 and drunk or high and knows how to hurt me. So I actually started trying to squat and body drag my husband. He's like 260 pounds. He's 6'2". And I got to where I could walk up and down the stairs with him on my back. I was trying to squat him. I was signing up for classes, and people made fun of me. And most of them were cops. But I won that fight, and I only came out with two injuries, and she's still alive with no injuries because I put in that time. And there's, so those two things is, please train physically, be healthy in every sense of the word, be healthy, because when you go to court and you're looking at your offender across the table, they absolutely will pull your training knowledge and experience and use it against you to ensure you don't get justice when you try to send that offender to prison.
One last thing that I thought of when you said the things that you said in response to, you know, what did you learn from this? What was the biggest, most profound thing that you figured out for this incident happening? Something I want to give to people, and they may not like it. And, you know, if you're actually lucky enough to get people to show up for you, that's wonderful, but don't ever count on it. So you have to know in life, you're going to be on your own a lot. And nobody's sending a rescue boat, right? So you're in the middle of the ocean, you're bobbing around. There's not land in sight. Mm-hmm. And maybe you got 10 hours. So you could either spend that 10 hours floating around just waiting to sink, or you could start fucking swimming because nobody is coming to get you. And even for me, I have best friends, acquaintances, supportive law enforcement, business acquaintances, coworkers. I've got all those people, but I'm on my own a lot more than most people would ever think. I'm on my own a lot. And I've gotten comfortable being on my own. And I don't know how you want to, in your mind, paint what that looks like. But I've said this before, I think, in the podcast. I'm like a bandito in my mind, like a cross between like a bandito and like a freelancer. But what a freelancer was, where that word came from, was a knight who traveled and was hired on contracts by royal families to go out and be a per hire knight. So essentially, a lonely drifter who could perform some of the most amazing tasks. And I'm just that dude out in the desert on my own with that, you know, shawl, would you call it, a throwover, like that Clint Eastwood looking thing, and just on my own, but trying to be one bad motherfucker while I'm doing it. And I don't, first of all, I don't even like help, but I just know that no matter what I get into, no matter how people, and I know that it's genuine at times where they express whatever they express, what I'm going through, whatever I'm going through or facing adversities, I know that it's on me. And people have to really make some kind of confirmation to be aware that you are going to be on your own a lot in life. And if you can acknowledge that now, it's going to make it a lot easier when you can say to yourself, okay, yeah, I'm on my own. This one's going to be on me. We have some bullshit going on here. And, you know, I'm just constantly reminded over and over again that, yeah, I'm on my own in this fight, right? I just am. It really falls back on me. So, you know, it's kind of negative to talk about it, but I do that for people in preparation for facing these tough, difficult things in life. Because Emily, you found out that you're on your own, and you found out the hard way, because you were waiting for people to show up for you. And when nobody did, it almost fucking took your life. And you can't wait for people. And dude, life's tough, right? You got to employ a lot of discipline with that.
I had no idea really what to expect of workers' comp. I assumed it was
fucking worse, guys.
I assumed, based on common sense in Emily's world, well, I fought for my life. So obviously I need to speak to a mental health professional. Oh, you have to pay for that on your own. Excuse you? I'm sorry. I don't speak that language. Try it again. And she's like, no, that's on you. And she was like, but also, unless you say, like you would have to say that you want to kill yourself, and then we will. And I'm like, I don't want to kill myself. I just don't want life to continue to be the way it's being. I just need to talk to someone with a couple letters behind their name who knows how to process what I saw, how I feel. And I was like, ma'am, do you understand? I'm never going to police the same way again. This changes who I am. And she's like, I know. And she was very kind. She was very kind, shockingly. But all through the process, and make matters even worse, George Floyd was murdered like right at the beginning of my injury. And so I had a doctor assault me. I had a doctor refuse to treat me. It was heinous shit. And I never told anybody. I was hoping that somebody would support me. It was more like a natural assumption that these things are in place. Like, there's policies for this, right? No, there's not. And you're going to have to contend every single day. So I'm a certified health coach now, and I help a lot of other cops and military guys. And I tell them, it is not a one and done. whether it's a weight loss goal, whether it's a fitness goal, whether it's a mental health goal, you're not done. You have to fight for yourself every single day. And it took me almost losing my life in the line of duty. And then one day standing in the middle of my parents' 9 acres, knowing I had the code to the safe, that I could just end it right there. Because my pain had reached such a horrible level physically, because I wasn't being treated by doctors. So my TBI was going untreated. My hand was rotting. It was as black as your wall. It was disgusting. And so I just was like, I had my moment. And the only thing I can tell anybody if they are having the same moment is decisions eliminate confusion, and they make you process your emotions faster because you made a choice. I chose that I deserved better. I chose that, you know what? No one showed up for me. This whole workers' comp thing is total bullshit. I'm not happy with where I am, but damn it, I'm going to figure out how to change my life. And so that moment, I wish I knew the day. I don't anymore. But everything changed. My mindset started to change. The music I listened to, the TV I watched, the anything I invested my time in. If you were a naysayer, you're not on my friends list anymore. Sorry, bye. Like, there was a group of cops that forgot I was in a group chat, and they were actively mocking me and my injuries. And I'm in the group chat and they forgot. So I just let it roll. I'm just watching and reading while I'm home trying to learn how to speak again, and couldn't remember things from day to day. And I'm just watching guys that I'm going to end up going back to the department with and work with, helped plan their weddings, baby showers, all that bullshit. And some people would take it as, well, fuck the police, I'm not going back. No, it just taught me I have to fight for me. Like, it has to start with me. I have to wake up for me. Don't roll out of bed 30 minutes before you have to leave. I started waking up earlier. I started working on my health. I became a coach. I left the department. And from there, it's why I'm here, is I knew I could affect change, continue to save lives. It was gonna be hard and it was gonna be lonely. But when you decide to lead, leadership involves loneliness, because you have to say the things that are hard. You have to level up in ways that people aren't prepared. And that's what makes you a leader. It's like, duh, the hard part is what makes it great and makes it worth it on the other end, for the random compliment you're not expecting, or for the one person, you know, 5 years later down the road who goes, I heard your story and I've been waiting for the day to see you and XYZ. Thank you so much. And you're like, Could you have shown up a couple of years earlier? I could have used that like 2 weeks ago when I was crying. You know, I think cops forget that we're not only fighting to serve and protect, but we have to fight for ourselves too.
Kind of go back a little bit. What happened to her? I was just as served. What happened to her kids? Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
She went to prison. And fun fact, do you remember when the law changed about felony assault on police officers? In Virginia, they changed the law like they changed the law to where they reduced the sentence. And I remember the CA called me and all she said was hello. And I was like, I know. And she's like, you're maybe going to get 2 years, Emily. And I was like, I said, Amy, it's not about the years for me. I said, even if she got no jail time, I want my day in court with her. And I got to court, my whole family's there, and I was looking for her husband. I was looking for her children. I was looking for her parents and her in-laws. I believe that the children are with the grandparents. I have no idea what her husband's doing. He does drugs. He's exceptionally violent. He stabbed her. I worked that case. It's how I met this family. The children are so sweet. They're little angels. They recognized me when I reached down to pick them up. So it wasn't even like, who's that? And I remember when it was time for me to go through the hallway to give my victim impact statement, the guys in the hallway who were working the courts, all the deputies, one of them looked like he was about to break down in tears. And he's like, I heard a completely different story about you. And I said, I know. I said, but you've got my phone number in your phone. Phone works both ways. Open the door. And I just it didn't bother me anymore. It's just like, open the door for me. Like I just kind of moved on. And she gets out of prison this year. And I hope she has a plan. In court, I looked her right in the eye and I forgave her. And I told her that your life has value. I hope that in prison, you take every resource possible to reinvent yourself, forgive yourself, have a relationship with your babies. She was kind of glossed and she didn't look at me. She had her lawyer let me know that she was sorry, but that didn't hurt my feelings either. Cause I know that it was probably a shock to her to hear that I forgave her. And there was a news reporter sitting directly in front of me in the seats and his whole mouth like drops open. And I left and I struggled. My voice cracked through most of it. I was shaking. I was sweating. I was trying not to cry. And I get to the hallway and one of the deputies, he pats me on the back and was like, good for you, kiddo, or something like that. And I just was like, no, that's not what that was about. Like you missed. No, that's not, it's not an attaboy. And I would love the chance to talk to her. I would love to be able to actually make sure she's healed. And somebody else might think that's nuts, but every life has value to me. And in uniform, that's how I treated people. My time in serving in the jails served me well on patrol. I knew most of the people that were high standing on top of their roof and they'd be like, Miss E, you know, or Miss H, or like they'd yell my name and they'd immediately listen. I saw them for who they were and it didn't bother me. So it didn't bother me that this person attacked me. It just, yeah, she changed my life forever. But for me, retribution is her coming out a better person. I really hope that she gets a relationship with her children. I do. And it's, some people say, oh, it's taken you, that must have taken you a lot. No, I love people. It's why I became a cop. I love them. I served them to the best of my ability. And if we don't believe in them, if we're not hoping that they heal, then how can we expect the world to be a better place if we're not leading by example? So through that, I hope that she has a plan. I know she'll be assigned to, you know, probation officer and all that stuff, but I hope on the other end, she's healthier and happier.
When was the decision to leave the police department made and why? What was the ultimate straw that broke the camel's back?
It was a slow death. This one I will share. Everything you do as a leader duplicates. How you make people feel, how you value or devalue them will have a lasting lifetime ripple effect. I'm cleared for full duty. And when I tell you, I was like white knuckling that piece of paper and sprinting down the hallway to find the patrol lieutenant. I am not exaggerating for our story. Called out his name. He stops and I'm tears. I'm smiling. I probably look red as a tomato that like, cause my heart's pumping so fast. And I told him, I was like, I'm back. I did the damn thing. I'm healed. I'm coming back to patrol. And this is his response. Oh, that's great. You can work the overtime detail this weekend. You still got all your shit, right? And I just froze. This man heard me weep on the phone after a doctor hit me. This man heard me weep on the phone after no one would pick up the phone medically, but even before I was assaulted. This man knew through snotty, shitty tears that, Lieutenant, all I want is to be back in my car. That's all I want is to be back on the road with my squad. That was his response to me. And I didn't blow up. I didn't freak out. I knew in my soul, life is never going to be the same. So I turned around, I walked to the squad room, and my nameplate was off my desk. My all my gear in my desk had been moved, had been fucked with. They stole my pens. And if you're a cop and somebody takes your pen, you have your favorite pens. Like, anyway, so all my stuff was gone. Somebody else was sitting writing a report. And they said, oh, I think they put all your stuff in a cardboard box in the female bathroom. And I'm like, thank you. It's like all I could push out was thank you. And I walk in and there's a cardboard box. I open it and there's all of my stuff like just dumped and with my nameplate sitting on the top. And I just stood there. I don't know how long. I didn't cry. It wasn't like this big movie moment. It was just, I think I might not be here one day. That was just my thought. So then I get back to patrol and I'm on day shift. I'd been night shift for years and they stick me on day shift. And then I knew, I was like, that's where they put you. That's when they, where they put you when they're done with you. And because on nights I was DUIs, I was drugs. I was in the thick of it. I was me first. And they put me on days. So you know what I did? I looked for drugs on days. I was the first person to the domestic calls. I was like, move. I beat a guy who was asleep behind the Ruby Tuesdays. I was like, move, I'm coming in. And I was getting written up. I was being gossiped about. I know I was being followed. It was bad because I also reported a lieutenant for sexual assault of a female at the department. And the person who investigated him was his prior roommate. Eventually the female who made the report of the assault, she changed her story, changed her tune. And I just, throughout this whole thing, everything's not going well. I'm also growing and working on my health. I'm behind the scenes reading the self-help books. I love the phrase, it'll hit me which podcast it was, but they said too many people have shelf help, where they buy the tool, but they don't use it. I read them all. I have read every book. I started studying. I lost 45 pounds. I'm getting healthy. I actually have like tone. I'm super stoked. And as I'm getting healthier, I'm like, this is, something's happening in me. Something's changing. And I thought about going to a different apartment. I sat in my living room with my mother, my father, and my husband, and I was like, it just kind of fell out. And I said, I think I might leave. And they thought I meant the department. And I said, no, I think I might leave for good. And my father was adamantly against it. He was like, your talents, your skills. My mom's crying. My husband's just kind of like that stoic, listening to me, trying to understand. I cried for days. I didn't sleep. I was physically ill. I was vomiting. I barely could eat. But decisions eliminate confusion. And I couldn't make a decision. So finally, I called my mentor. And he's like, I was wondering when you were going to call me. And so I tell him everything happening. And he's like, you've already made your decision. You just don't want to do it because you're in pain. You've got to make a choice. And I quit about 2 weeks later. And I did it very quietly. I didn't tell anyone. I told my sergeant and I said, I don't need this to be some big, like, ooh. I was like, I'll tell dispatch. I'll tell the few people who give a shit, which is like two. And that's fine. And he's like, are you sure? And he actively tried to get me to stay. I will give him that. And he's like, it was a nice compliment. He's like, I don't know how to replace you. And I said, yes, you will. What you're going to do is you're just going to continue to teach and train and move on. And in like 2 weeks, you won't feel this way. Just keep doing the job. And I cleaned out my desk. And the very last day of duty, the lieutenant, the chief tried to hem me up and tried to write me up. They actually tried to corner me. After everyone was gone, the lights were off. They tried to corner me in an office saying I didn't report somebody for bad behavior. And I had, I knew something was going to happen. I just had a feeling. It was like a women's intuition. Like I called my father because I thought he was close to town. And I was like, are you armed? And he's like, actually, I'm right at the gas station across the street. And I was like, get here now. I was like, something's happening. And he was outside in the parking lot watching through the window because I was convinced I was going to be hurt. I just knew something was happening. And when my father pulled up, he had a huge diesel and it threw off their OODA loop long enough that I was able to get out. I was able to leave. And I drove home all the way in my patrol car sobbing. And I marked off for the last time in tears. And that was it. I walked away. And it's the hardest decision up until that point that I had ever made.
When did it dawn on you, because it had to before the incident occurred, that you worked at an agency that was, according to you, so toxic? When did it dawn on you? Because I remember when it dawned on me for my agency, I knew that I realized there was a moment that I could tell you what it was. That it was, I just knew this place was fucked up. And I was actually in denial. A lot of people like, this place is fucked up. Place fucked up. This is what they do. Play fucking games, psychological games. They do this shit. This is the games they play. This is the games they play. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Right. I like it here. They don't bother me. Blah, 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 blah. We had a cop get killed in our town, not from our jurisdiction, mm-hmm. but in a car crash from another jurisdiction on duty. And we didn't have one person from our command staff go to the guy's wake or funeral. It was all just patrol. We had 200 guys at the agency. So you probably had, I'm going to guess, 90 command staff that was available to go. And guys who were later became sergeants and lieutenants were there. But at that time, there was not one person with chevrons or higher at that event. And I never forget coming back and I saw this guy, and I don't want to put him out there. He's a fucking asshole anyway, but nobody liked him. He's just a strange fucking dude. And we were bringing back the keys for the patrol cars. We went to the, I had to go to the second floor for something. I remember the elevator door opening and he was standing there and we were in our class A's, you know, like our dress blouses and shit. And he's standing there with a cup, like a medium cup of Dunkin' Donuts, like that he bought at Dunkin' Donuts. And he's like, what are you guys all dressed up at for? And I'm like, you know, the guy who was killed. I literally was like, you know, the guy who was killed in our town like a week ago on Route 1. I was like, we were at his funeral today. He's like, oh yeah, I was today. I'm like, yeah, that was today. And you can't make this stuff up. Like, how can I come up with that? I could vividly see him standing there with his, because it was, I think it was during the winter. So he was wearing a long sleeve with a tie, his dumb fucking glasses on, and that stupid fucking cup of Dunkin'. And like, they just couldn't be bothered. But that's the fault of the top leadership, because we actually asked for an honor guard and they were like, we're not paying you for it. We're not designated a vehicle for it. We're not paying for rifles for it. And we're like, and they just say like, you guys are trying to get out of going to work. And I'm like, we're not. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And I'm like,
oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Like people would be like, I know cops are listening and like some of the stuff sounds so insane because you're like, nah, I'm not making that up. It's a real thing. And of all people, the guys who wanted to do it were the most proactive guys we had. They just wanted to go do the right thing. We went to more, man, I went to funeral after funeral after funeral, and we had 200 man agency. It was just me and my partner, Carlos, often. And this other guy, Eddie and Pat, they showed up to a couple of them too. But I remember we went to a few, I think I've told the story in the podcast. I went to a funeral on, we had a guy not too far from here get killed in line of duty, bad one. And I don't want to go into too much details of who it was. And we asked the lieutenant day before, who was a good dude. It was actually Eddie's dad. We're like, hey, LT, you want to go to this guy's funeral tomorrow down in South Jersey? And he's like, no problem. Not a problem at all. But lieutenant didn't come to work the next day. So now you got a sergeant, a shift commander. And we're busy agency, right? But it wasn't that insane. And she was having a fit that they were there. We were there. She like thought we were trying to skate out of work. So now we're at this guy's funeral. It was a hot day too. You know, it's 10:30 in the morning. The procession's starting. Phone's ringing. Where are you guys? What's your status? Sergeant wants to know. I'm like, we're in fucking South Jersey at a funeral and the bagpipers are about to start playing. 11:30. What's your status? Where are you guys at? They just ceased the cemetery thing. We are going back to the repast now. Nope, no repast. Come back, have lunch here. I'm like, listen, guys, we've been out here standing in this heat all fucking day in long sleeve shirts with hats on. We're going to repast. We're getting water and sandwiches. We haven't eaten yet today. And we got a fucking 1-hour drive back. And I'm telling you, come back. And I'm like, can you believe these fucking people? Like, we're literally at a slain, shot and killed police officer. slain police officer, young guy, at his funeral, and these motherfuckers are calling us nonstop to see where we're at. We didn't create overtime. It wasn't chaos. There wasn't some catastrophic event, but you had these old fuckers on the road like, where are these two? We're doing these calls, and they're doing like shoplifters, bumper-to-bumper crashes. And we just like could not believe. I remember you could ask my old partner, Carlos. We're just like, what the fuck is this about? How is this possible?
They had to go do actual police work. That's why.
It's not even that. They're just like, but people don't like these stories sound so inconceivable that they almost sound like you're fucking lying. But how could I? Yeah. And I've told these stories so many times that they're real. They're not fake. And, mm-hmm. You know, I got to tell you, the camaraderie, when I worked at the Department of Corrections here, not the state, I worked for the county. Those guys were just, they just had so much more giving a fuck. Even U.S. Park Police, when I worked for those guys, they gave a fuck. They sent 20, 30 people to us, and we were shorthanded, and like it was already bad. And we sent 20, 30. Like, there was a sergeant who got shot there when I was working there. Steve, I don't want to fuck up his last name, and I don't want to do disservice to the family, but he was shot in the line of duty and killed. And we sent like 30, 40 people to that event. And I was proud to be there with them. And we did escorts for them and everything. Now I'm at this fucking place. We had a guy killed in our town. And they're like, oh, that funeral was today. And that's when I said to myself, now I know for sure that this place is fucked up. I work for some fucked up people because I knew they just didn't care. And that's the problem. Like, they just didn't give a fuck. They just didn't.
Yeah.
When I'm done with this podcast, I'm going to my old, I'm going to somebody's wake that they don't expect me to go to. Now, I had to hire a babysitter to watch my four children. My wife is not going to be around to go do this thing. There is not an ounce of humanity in my body I have a headache right now. You know, I'm just getting over being sick. I've had a crazy fucking day. Been going hard since fucking 5 o'clock. I was up at 4:30 in the morning. I had a nightmare last night, which is weird because I'm not like 6 years old.
You did too. That's very weird. Yeah.
I had a very strange nightmare where I was like mentally ill. It was a really strange one, right? So it was a strange one. And believe me, there's been enough shit going on in my life in the past 2 years that you'd be like, oh, okay, that I can see where that comes from. So when my wife said, oh, what's the nightmare from? I go, do I really have to circle back around to
like,
why?
Well, these let me pick one.
But there's not an ounce of humanity in me that would ever consider not going tonight. As much as most people would say, he wasn't expecting me to go anyway. I don't even want to go because of where it's at. And there is not a question in my mind that you will see me there in about an hour and a half from now. And everything about it's inconvenient. About it's inconvenient, right? Everything about it has nothing to do with me, though, right? Did you think I took great joy in going to these guys' funerals? No, I fucking hate going to police funerals. You know, and everybody in this room knows, and everybody in this listening podcast knows, they're never on like a beautiful spring day where it's 70 and 65 and cool. It's always like 106 degrees. Pouring rain, freezing cold, snow, ice storms. And, but I go because it's the right thing to do because I know that it's not about me and my comfort level. And sometimes I miss them, right? Because I have to balance, like when I have an itinerary that I have to show up for, right? Like I plan courses 3, 4, 7 months, a year in advance. So if services land on a day for somebody who lost their life in the line of duty and I can't go because I'm going to be teaching 150 cops somewhere, you might say, well, we probably don't want to lose the money. No. That's 150 cops who are going to learn how to not die in the line of duty that day. So while I mourn with everybody else, I have to make decisions of where I belong the most. And I've had a lot of people who've reached out to me after their coworkers, their friends have been killed in the line of duty. And I say, you know, I'm going to try to make it to the services. Anything I can do. And they go, he would have wanted you to do, she would have wanted you to do what you're doing. So don't deviate for this person because they wouldn't want that. They want you to continue to spread the word of what you're doing because it's important. So often at times when you're going down a path like this, and I see you're at the stage where you feel like you have to explain things a lot, try to release some of that shit. You don't have to explain things a lot. If you ever feel like you have to explain things and it comes to times where you really feel like you need to explain it, then you can explain it. But the people that know you the best and know what your intentions are will never question what your motives are. You might say, well, Bonino's this big police leader and he's not at every funeral. I can't be. And there's a reason why. It's not a selfish reason either. It's actually a very selfless reason. And I don't even know I have to explain that, but we have this guilt inside of us of having to explain things. I have success guilt. A lot of people don't know what that is.
Oh my God. So freaking true. Ugh.
Yeah. So I want, outside of the cop Dennis Bonino, I want everybody to know like what's possible and what life is like at different levels. And I try to share these things. And, you know, people are like, it's not even people who are close to me that are the biggest critics. I've had my parents, oh, you sound like a fucking bragger last night. As you got to talk about that. That's, you sound like a real fucking bragger. I'm like, I wasn't doing it to brag. I'm not insecure like that. As a matter of fact, most of the stuff that I have or do is not, we make decisions as a family. Like, this is probably not something that's going to rub people the right way, 'cause it's going to look this way. But if I decide that it's something that might change somebody's life, I'm like, well, I'm not worried about how people perceive it. If I think this can impact somebody, I'm going to talk about it. My friend Rob is the most successful realtor in New Jersey and one of the most successful in the country and in the world. And he was on the podcast last week. That episode will be coming out. And we talked about success and how he lives his life. Guy owns 4 supercars, right? So at the end, he's like, do you think that resonates well with your audience? I go, you got to stop worrying about that. I wasn't worried about everybody's perception of what I was trying to do on that. It wasn't, it could have sounded like peacocking and showboating, but it had nothing to do with it. It had to do with the possibilities of two guys who come from a town where we grew up lower middle class. He's the son of 2 immigrants from Poland and a family who came here who had nothing and lived in almost nothing, and what it meant to be and live the American dream. And a guy like me who people come to me and ask questions about, like, you know, when did it change? What did you do? I'm not going to not tell them out of fear of people judging me sounding like I'm bragging. I want you to know what I know. I'm an open book. I want you to know what it feels like at different levels of money. I get criticized left and right. People can cast judgment all they want, but the people who really are the street cop family, the ones who put this proudly on their shirts, hats, vests, they know exactly what the fuck this is about. Do I make a good living? Yeah. But guess what? So do 45 instructors, and so do 15 full-time employees and a handful of part-time employees who have had their lives changed because of the efforts that I'm doing. And I don't take nearly as much as I could, because I reinvested into things to make the profession better. I live a more comfortable life than I ever thought I'd live, but I'm certainly not flying private, ripping $400,000, $500,000 cars. I just live comfortably, and I work 7 days a week. I have paid my dues. I have done things outside of street cop training. I was in real estate. I own houses. I renovated houses. I spent summers grinding. I lived in basements. I lived on couches. I lived in fucking ruins. I was broke. I was ashamed. I had to ask for money from my father, which was a very tough thing to do from a guy who was not the type of guy you want to ask money for. He wasn't a very giving man. My parents were very extremely judgmental people. In his mind, he could not figure out how I didn't have any. So there's a lot of things that I paid my dues and I continue to pay them. And anybody with success will tell you the same thing. And that's essentially the conversation with me and Rob was. And you know, we're now targeted and we sit here saying, like, man, we're trying to do something. Rob has created so much great shit for people. He's got like 60 employees. He's changed people's lives. He made people wealthy. And he's targeted because he's a known person. He was targeted by you government entities, as so am I. It's fucking wild. It's a wild thing. And I see people, you would think I'm crazy if I explain to you what we experience at this level. You would think you like wouldn't believe it. You would think we're fucking nuts to say the things we said.
I probably would think you were nuts the day before I got hurt, but not after. There is power in saying where you are and how hard it took to get there. I didn't understand for a long time why sharing your story is so pivotal, and sharing it over and over and over is because the nuances of the journey it took for you to get to where you are and sharing that story makes people appreciate where you are now. Because so many people, I was one of them. I went with the flow. I was part of the toxic world. And the second that I decided not to be, loneliness. And it's why so many people reject anything that is outside of going with the flow. Because when you decide that I want to see what's possible, I want to do X, Y, Z, and it might cause me to have to start right back from the bottom again, crawl and the gnashing of teeth back up, but it's worth it. And through that, I have found that with every new obstacle, with every new level up, a new devil arrives. And that's just one more thing I'm going to have to pivot and learn. And I think if I could go back, but I can't, it's like the knowledge now that it's almost like, yeah, you're comfortable, but I bet you're also equally as uncomfortable, as equally as, okay, I'm getting comfortable, so I need to go learn something new. I'm doing this skill, which is requiring me to do something else. It's like people think that it's linear. And it's like, no, you literally have to constantly pivot and hunt and work and just grind constantly in order to have an inch. And people think it's going to be a foot. No, it's usually an inch. And you got to be grateful for the inch and then build on that. And it's, I have found there's no secret sauce. You asked me, what was the moment I knew is when I left the clicks. It's when I stopped. It's when I had like, a moment of awakening of realizing
I get it.
That I'm actually part of the problem. And prior to my injury for that previous year, I had actually been slowly separating myself away from those clicks. And that's, like I said, it was a slow burn.
You know, when I say comfort, with that comfort comes a lot of uncomfortability on many levels. That's you're right. It's a small piece of comfort that is just something I've earned. And boy, folks, if you want to talk about living life very uncomfortably in every other sense, come walk a day in my shoes. Outside the 5 days of the Streak Out Conference, because that is like literally, I cannot emphasize. I remember today I actually woke up when I was up at 4:30 in the morning. I was like, man, I hope I can sleep the day before the conference, right? Because it's like, I have never experienced euphoria like that in my life. And I had five of the most insane, especially guys, an adrenaline junkie. I mean, it was nuts. You would have thought I was like a celebrity down there. And then you come back and you're like, oh, wait, I'm not the most debonair. Like, it was just insane. But, and I tell people this, I've been chasing that vacation and I haven't gotten close to it my whole life. So I'm hoping I don't have that repeat process of like the 2021 conference was so profound for me. Oh, it was amazing. Like, I can't even emphasize, there wasn't a moment that I didn't like, even though it was a fucking hard week and running a conference is insane. I like the chaos of it. Just getting to see everybody is so fucking amazing. And what it means for people to come and spend time with us is amazing. I never go somewhere and like, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go here and people are going to recognize me and they're going to take pictures and like, they're going to admire me. I'm like, I know if I go here, it's probably going to make people's day for them to get an opportunity to shake hands, say hello, and take a picture with me. And that's why I want to go. So, you know, people are like, oh, like you're going because of it. No, I'm actually going because I think it's going to make a difference for this guy. And like, he's going to be, as weird as it sounds, because I'm a regular dude, this dude, this girl are going to be happy that they got to meet me. And that's, and they're going to be happy to take a picture with me. And they got to meet me for real and find out that I'm a really nice guy and I'm a really humble dude. And that's,
and some
that's
of them are probably bullshit. Feeling lucky to be there because I when I was on light duty, I filled in as a training coordinator and I fought to get legitimate interdiction training and drugs training because I was being told drugs were not in my town, yet we were finding drugs. Yet I would patrol one parking lot. I'm finding cocaine, I'm finding weed, it's if nobody's looking, then I'll be the only one who gets it then. And they were like, oh, that's not the kind of department we are. And I'm like, hence the training. Like, so I get being the patrol officer who signs up, and most of them probably paid to be there on their own dime, probably used vacation days, probably fill in the blank, and you realize that you've created a resource. And that's what's powerful. And that's what will break generations, because they came to the training, they heard quality versus just feeding the masses, you know, a blanket statement. And it hears specifics. They turned around and now they're going to go teach some 21-year-old kid who has been sworn in for 2 minutes how to actually be a good patrol cop, how to actually look for drugs, stay safe, be effective, and piss off command. It's great.
Well, thank you for acknowledging that. I am not afraid of pissing off command. I had a guy call me last week and he said, well, it's well known that you don't like administrations. I said, tell me where it says I don't like administrations. He goes, well, dude, that's what people say. Like, you're a big anti-administration guy. I go, that's funny, because last week I had dinner with 7 chiefs. So tell me how, and they're like some of my best fucking pals. We have a chief that works here, as a matter of fact. We have captains that work here. Most of our instructors are sergeants and higher. So tell me how I'm anti-administration. And he's like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, I am anti-horrific administration. I know got significantly injured. I've told this story in the podcast and in class. And it just, I don't even want to get him the pot stirred because it's still going on. But what they did to him after his significant injury, how they lied to his face, how they paraded him around. And then they're like, it's just such a fucked up thing. And of course, it's one of the administrations that don't appreciate street cop trainings, anti-administration sentiment. You're a fucking asshole. That's what I'm saying. It has nothing to do with your bars, your flowers, your eagles. You're a fucking asshole for doing it to this poor fucking dude. You guys should be kissing the ground this motherfucker walks on, not treat him like he's a piece of shit. That's why I don't like you. That's why I'm going to call you out publicly. And guess what? The 90% of chiefs and administrators who agree with me go, yeah, fuck those guys. Those 10% of guys and girls in those kind of administrative positions, they find each other, they band together, and they're like, fuck that guy, Bonino. Right? And everybody else is like, nah, we're behind you, dude. And like, I'm unafraid to say that at my detriment. I had a guy years ago. He's like, you know, you better watch what you say, because those are the people that basically sign your paychecks and make people go to your training. I go, I am not going to pander and sell my laurels and my morals on some concern for myself. I will continue to stand firm on my position. I will not apologize unless I need to apologize for the things that I say, because I believe in them. And at the end of the day, you'll never find a story about me being a rat piece of shit, somebody who kicked somebody while they were down, threw salt in their wounds, or stabbed them in the back. You can't. It's impossible. I know it. And if I've ever behaved outside of character, it was probably due to some other kind of shitty life force going on in my world. And I promise you, I could tell you one story and I don't want to tell you that. But when I realized that I was a fucking dick for it was a girl thing, right? I went to that person. I was like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. I was in a weird fucking place. And, you know, no shit. It's a crazy story. I don't want to tell it publicly because I don't know if they're friends of mine. And they forgave me immediately and then promptly invited me to their fucking wedding. I showed up and we've been fucking friends ever since. And that's one of those times where I was a young guy and I just did something that is not of my character. And, you know, I'm proud to say that I may make mistakes as I go on in life, but I know I always do things with the right intention. I never do it with the wrong motivations. I'm not sitting here like we're selling conference booths, right? And they're selling out pretty quick, which I'm fucking pumped about. A guy from that we had in the podcast, he does police jiu-jitsu. He's like, yo, I'm going to buy one of your conference boots. I'm like, don't do that. I'm like, what are you making a year? And he tells me, you know, because I'm trying to like give him a little business coaching shit. And I'm like, don't buy a booth. He's like, why? I'm like, because I don't think you're going to get a good ROI on it, dude. You know what I mean? Like, it's an expensive booth. It's a lot of money for a guy like you who's not, you know, who's at the beginning stages of his business career. I don't think it's going to fare well for you because you don't have the ability to have this thing where people are gonna be like, so, and I didn't say that because I, you know, was trying to thwart his business. If I was wrong about it, I didn't do it with the intention of being wrong about it. I really felt like I would have been a piece of shit to take his money, right? And him get no value in return. I actually probably would have just ended up giving his money back. And I can't stomach doing the wrong thing ever. So we live by a thing, and I quote Gary Vaynerchuk, it's doing the right thing is always the right thing. Mm-hmm. So we always hear do the right thing. My staff doesn't have to ask me about doing the right thing, right? As long as you're like, sometimes like, hey, we were going to send this guy. I go, you don't have to ask about mm-hmm. that. You all have authorization up to $500 to make decisions. Once it's over 500, hit me up. But like,
yeah.
You all have authorizations to, I don't want to hear, you know, we get this like, hey, it's a week before the conference. They want their money back. I'm like, so give them their fucking money back. I want you to be able to say when somebody says, oh, fuck that guy. He's all just about making money. Yeah, I'm a very good businessman, but it doesn't mean I'm a piece of shit. It just means I'm able to procure revenue to build something to make it better for everybody else. And if you really look at how
save the world if we're all broke.
I can't do anything for anybody if I have nothing. I can't make mm-hmm. better products if we at this company can't procure revenue. So like an app came out it's coming out any day now. And the app was thousands and thousands of dollars. And my staff here is like, we could probably get like $6 a person for this app. And like, it's like 10,000 people, it's like $60,000 a year. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not charging for that. And they're like, but like everybody else is doing it. And I'm like, I know what everybody else is doing. I'm not charging for that. And mm-hmm. you know, that's really business 101. If I wasn't making money, I couldn't do all these great things. And yes, I think I should be rewarded for the work that I'm doing, the prices that I'm paying. And believe me, some people think I'm like this wealthy, wealthy, wealthy dude. I'm not. I do better than the average Joe, no question about it, right? But this Sunday, while you're watching football, just don't forget, your boy here is watching it on a flight while he's working, sitting on a plane, maybe getting delayed, maybe getting sick again, then landing somewhere, renting a car, driving 2 hours to where I got to be, then going to a hotel room, then getting on a fucking FaceTime video and seeing my kids and being told that this one just lost a tooth and you missed it, or this one just took her first steps and you missed it. And I'm mm-hmm. saying like, what do you want me to do? This is the life that I chose. And then the next day, waking up at fucking 6, teaching at 5 o'clock in the morning, teaching everybody, then driving 2 hours back to an airport, getting 5 hours of sleep, getting back on a plane. And don't forget, like, that's why I have some of the comforts that I have, because I'm willing to be very uncomfortable for that shit. And I give mm-hmm. a fuck about everybody so much. And that's why people know who, when they meet me, who I really am. And that's, you can't make that up. I can't just pour this shit out as a fucking charlatan and a bullshit artist. You can't just come up with this stuff and it just pours out of your system and you sound so convincing about it without being the truth. And again, I make fucking mistakes. Like, what do you want me to do? Right. But I'm willing to make mistakes for everybody to get better, get training, and just have a better life and a better quality of life. Got a guy last night, literally sends me a message on Instagram. He's like, yo, dude, that post you put up earlier, I put it on the Instagram story. You probably still see it right now. Go on my Instagram story. I'll fucking read it right now, dude.
Oh, like I'll just read it. Somewhere in the house. I don't even know.
No, I'll read it to you because it's still got to be up. Hey, guys, keep putting out your material. I have been a cop for 18 years. Tonight almost killed me. Your post about passenger side approaches popped in my head. It saved me. Thank God. Thank you. Keep up your good work. I said, no shit, dude. Thank God. I'm glad you're safe. He goes, guy off himself. I started walk up on the driver's side. Then your post rang out. Plus the voice in my head kicked in. I know better than driver's side. I'm a stickler for safety but still almost messed up because of my laziness. So thank you for continuing to post it. It matters what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
4:30 in the morning this morning, you're seeing me post on Instagram. Some of it's humorous. Some of it's important. I'm fucking tired, but I'm never going to stop for everybody.
Yeah, there was somebody who they were hateful as hell. And they're like, oh, you think you're better now? Or you're talking shit on police. And I'm like, you're missing the point. Like the hard work, the effort that goes in, like your efforts going into it, the conversations you are having, the information you're training, or me posting on social media and having these hard conversations, telling my story. We're not talking about the bad stuff because we hate law enforcement or we hate anyone in particular. We hate the bad things. So therefore we must talk about
you.
It. Therefore,
and we love you. That's why we're saying it to our detriment. Mm-hmm. You want to be me. You want to come out and hear these fucking, I got to hear that at this meeting, my name was brought up and I'm told that 6 chiefs agreed that nobody's going to my training anymore and have no clue who I am. and the other 10 who do support me and four of which are my friends don't say a fucking peep because they just don't fucking feel like getting involved. Like, and I'm not mad about that. Just like, you want to hear that? You want to live through that kind of anxiety? It doesn't make me anxious anymore. 10 years ago, I'd have been like, oh my God. Right now, I just know how to deal with it because I'm used to it. My attorney, we have a PR guy now. And he said to me, he's like, Ron Simoncini's his name. He's like, you seem so very calm about all this stuff. I'm like, brother, I'm battle hardened, right? Like, I'm so used to being in the ringer. If I'm not in the ringer, I'm like, what's wrong? Like, why am I not in the ringer? Yeah, why is everything so fucking okay right now? I just used to be in the ringer. My whole life I was in the ringer because I was this guy. Anyway, listen, Em, what's one last message for these people before we wrap this motherfucker up? Because I got to go to this wake.
Your life really, really does matter. And what you do with it is powerful because someone is watching you. I think a lot of people believe that you have to be Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, or you have to have like some massive amount of numbers to have impact. And you can have impact right now, today. And I am sure you've heard this is, where do I start? What do? Go with the very first inspired thought and stop telling yourself no, stop resisting the urge and go out and chase after the thing that you know will make a difference and actually fuel you. Like, I felt empty for so long because I was pushing down the dreams, the hopes, all my talents and abilities, just like you said it just a moment ago, because they didn't want to get involved. They didn't want to start a problem. They didn't want to have an argument or stir the pot, have the conversations, get loud, be bold. Because if we do not, it takes one decision and everything's gone and we're Gotham. And that's not okay with us. You signed up to be a police officer on some level. You decided to be an intercessor. You decided to step in between. And the reason it's such a thin blue line is because there's so few who are willing to do the right thing. And most reasons, this is not my quote, it's from Tony Robbins, and it helped me through some of the darkest parts. But one of the reasons people are depressed is because they don't have a compelling future. They don't see anything for themselves. And I'm like, you are limiting your future because you refuse to believe in yourself, but yet you're giving of yourself to everyone else. Stop giving of yourself to everyone else and actually invest in the training, invest in the experience. And it doesn't have to just be police. If you've got dreams outside of that, make a list, start with the first three things that are feasible and see where it goes. You know, you can't just, if you dream your life into the grave, you're going to regret it. And that was something that was so powerful in me of it almost was like, if I don't act, I'm gonna explode. Like, if I don't do the thing in here, I'm gonna freak out. I won't be able to sleep or eat or do anything else because it means that much to you. So it's, if anybody has made them feel like a number, if anyone's made them feel like, or if you're sucked into that same toxic bullshit, because I know there's a lot of people who listen in and want to be better. They want to step outside of that and they're in the drama circle. Make a decision, because decisions eliminate confusion, and then just embrace whatever happens next. Because all it takes is a decision to walk away. You don't have to walk away from law enforcement, but you can walk away from the shitty people. You don't have to go down that road, delete numbers, don't go to the party, put down the alcohol, chase after what makes you joy-filled. It's what you did. You saw a problem and you're filling a need. We need more of that. And we need more leaders to actually act like it.
I have one last piece of advice for you. And before I give you that last piece of advice, I want to say it's been an honor having you. I'm glad that you reached out to me. I'm honored to have you here. You'll probably offer some reciprocity there, but you don't have to say anything to that. But this is the last piece of advice I have for you. And I want you to just keep it in the back of your head anytime you think it gets hard or it's going to get hard inevitably is don't stop. Just keep going. It's not always going to be results that you want, but just keep going. Don't stop. You got a lot of things to do and it's going to be daunting. Just don't forget that shit.
I won't.
You have a friend in me. And if you ever want to do anything further and you want thoughts and advice, I'm a person that you have access to. Your best bet is to text me to start. And yes, I really was a very, very sick boy last week and I had to cancel our podcast appointment.
That was so funny.
I ended up being really sick.
Well, thank you for giving me the space. Anybody who's willing to give someone a voice, I had no idea where that pitch was going to go. And, you know, I'm thankful to have been here, and please don't get the stomach flu again.
If people want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. They're all public. I've done that purposefully, is I know exactly what it means to want to talk to someone who gets it, and they don't know where that is, because like we've already chatted about. And also, when you're in the darkest parts of where you are, your brain is like, well, I don't have the insurance, I don't have the money. A conversation with me is free. That's, you know, like you said, is the app is free. The give them their money back is, we can't save the world if we gatekeep. And so they can find me Instagram, Facebook, send me a message. I'd love to hear your story. Is giving people a voice in a space really does matter, because unmuzzled is the only way to live.
What's your IG handle?
Emily.Henderson.1.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I'll see you.
Thank you.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.